We want to welcome, good morning, first of all, for welcoming those both here in the, who are present here this morning for our breakfast, as well as those who are joining us virtually. So we want to extend a warm welcome on behalf of Gwinnett Leadership Forum. We have a signature sponsor for our event this morning, that's Regions Bank, so we thank them for their participation. For some of you who may not know, the Gwinnett Leadership Forum, we've been in existence for about 8 years. We became a nonprofit organization very recently, in the last 2 years, I guess. So we're continuing to move forward with really trying to bring a positive and inspirational point of view to leadership. We kind of feel that leadership, as we have been taught and actually heard many of the speakers that have come and shared with us, leadership is more than a position. It's really, it's who you are. And that kind of dictates how you lead both your families and in your business and work environment, or in whatever walks of life that you find yourself. We've been very privileged to have over the years a number of top quality speakers, including international known CEOs, nationally known athletes, and a wide variety of regional folks here. So today will be no exception to the rule in terms of what you're going to be able to hear today. Our guest speaker this morning is Charlie Paparelli. He's going to be introduced in just a moment by one of our board members. But just as an agenda for what we're going to be doing today, Charlie will come and speak, and then subsequent to that, we'll kind of open it up for questions and answers for anyone who would like to do so. And that will be both through the Zoom communication that we're doing today, as well as people who are present here this morning. And then we've got some, I think, some great news about, exciting news, really, about our leadership roundtables that we'll be talking about a little bit more at the conclusion of our program today. So stay tuned for that. So again, a warm welcome to everyone, and at this point, I'm going to invite one of our board members, Darian Sutherland, to come and give an introduction to our speaker for the day. Darian?
Charlie didn't know I was going to get to introduce him, but let me just say this. I met Charlie the first time about 2007, 2008, something like that, and I always tell this story anywhere I'm at, and it's kind of funny how we met, because we're a lot alike in a lot of ways, in the way we're just both blunt and open and honest. But 2007, 2008, I'm sitting at a ball game at Lovett High School. Our sons are both in the eighth grade. I said, as I'm sitting in the stands, I looked at my wife, and I'm that abrasive dad that said, "Who's that kid at third base that just threw the ball not only over the first baseman's head, but threw the ball over the fence?" Charlie turns around and says, "That's my son." Since that day, we've had since that day, the thing I'm most proud of with Charlie is we've had a personal relationship. Business-wise, he's helped me with information. He's helped me go to this person, that person. He's always been a source I can lean on. But more than anything else, he's been a personal friend. So for me to stand up here today and introduce him and tell all his business accolades, which he certainly has from everything that he's done, I don't know, because we always talk personal. And he's always took personal interest in me and how things are going on with me and my family. Case in point, last year, 1 year from tomorrow, I celebrated my 50th birthday party. My wife throws me a surprise birthday party. Guess who's sitting at the table when we walk in the room? Charlie. That means a lot. That means a lot. So He's a wealth of knowledge. He tells it like it is. And that's why you either love him or you just tolerate him. But he's my friend, and I never hang the phone up with him that he don't say I love you. So he don't know how much I appreciate that. Go welcome Charlie Pepperelli.
Man, what a great introduction that was. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, I remember turning around saying, yeah, that's my son. You know, I said, by the way, my name is Charlie Pepperelli. I said, how you doing? Who are you? He said, I'm embarrassed. That was his name, okay? That was it. And it's hard to embarrass Darren, to tell you the truth. But it's I really appreciate being here. Thanks, Lee, for inviting me. Thanks to the board for inviting me. You know, I love talking about leadership. It just doesn't seem like I get that much of an opportunity to do it. And I love putting these talks together because what it does is it's sort of, if you ever get asked to speak on anything, okay, that's anywhere in your expertise, take that opportunity to do it, because what it does is it synthesizes what's floating around in your head. And that's what this did for me. It synthesized, it says, I'm speaking to leaders about leadership. So what is it? How do we get this message out? It's important. So I am a professional angel investor. I've been doing this for over 25 years here in the Atlanta technology area, in the Atlanta area. I focus in the technology sector. And as an angel investor, what's most important is to have the ability to see great future leaders. That's what we do. I mean, I'm an early stage investor, so there isn't a whole lot of business there. There's just an idea and a person. And so sussing out this person and saying they're a great leader, the future, is really important, because after all, what I invest in is people who are intending to create something from nothing. And that's a special leader. We happen to call those people entrepreneurs. Now, one of the things that I found is there are really two types of leaders that I invested in. And the first type of leader is the ones that say, there is a God and it's me. And the second type of leader is, there is a God and it's not me. Now, that's a pretty good distance between those two. But the first half of my career, I came to realize that I was on the first page, which is there is a God and it's me. And then later in life, I came through a transition that was pretty difficult, and I'm going to talk about it, is I came to the point where there is a God and it's not me. And that was a hard path for me to get to, I can tell you that. Let me tell you a little of this story. So I grew up I have a religious background, okay? I'm not going to name denomination, but I have a religious background. And having gone to religious school for 12 years, okay, so here I was 18 years old, and I got to the point where I said, you know, I'm feeling guilty all the time. This religion stuff just makes me feel awful about myself, and I'm not that bad a person. I'm really not that bad a person. So I made the decision at 18 years old to actually walk away from religion. In fact, I actually walked away from God. I just said, I don't need any of this. Just don't need it. It doesn't do me any good. And so I chose my own path and I walked away from God. I went to the University of Miami. I graduated with a degree in accounting. I did about 6 months at this small accounting firm, and I realized it's a lot better to study accounting, a lot more fun than it is to do accounting. And I looked at all the people in the room that were the accountants that were around me, and I'm like, these guys are really talented accountants, and I'm not good at this. So I kind of got through school okay, but man, doing it just didn't come easy to me. So one of the things I learned in life is that discontent in whatever you're doing has you look up and has you start seeing all of the opportunities that are around you. And one of the things I did is not wanting to do accounting is I found there was what's called a paper tape machine that was in that office that was kind of hidden in the corner of the office, and it connected to a service bureau. So instead of doing accounting manually, you can do type in the transactions and you send it to the service bureau and financial statements came back. So I stayed late at night and learned how to do that. I wasn't particularly good in college at computers. I had to take one computer course. It was in Fortran. The first time I didn't drop it fast enough and I failed it. And the second time I actually wound up with a D to pass it. Okay. So I wasn't super talented in that area either. But when I had this interest, it was funny how the stars aligned. And what happened to me is IBM at that time, it was 1976, introduced something called the System 32. And it was billed as the first affordable small business computer. And it cost, for what we have in our pocket, you know, it actually back then cost $50,000. And it was the size of a bedroom set. Okay, it was amazing. But they were selling it, and my boss saw that I was interested in computers. He said, well, why don't we look at this? So we went down to IBM in Coral Gables, Florida, for a presentation from IBM on their computer to CPA firms. They flew in a guy named Richard Brock, who was a CPA from Mobile, Alabama. So Richard Brock shows up, and he gives his presentation, and I fell in love with this guy. He was the first entrepreneur that I actually saw in my life. I came from a middle-class family, blue collar, all that. And so I didn't know anything about business. And when I met Richard, we really hit it off. It was just a few months later that I actually showed I had some talent around this computer. And he said, why don't you join me, become partners with me, and we'll build this business of selling software to CPAs. So I moved to Mobile, Alabama. And I want to tell you, he taught me everything. He changed the course of my life. One person, early on in my career, I was 22 years old. He brings me on. He teaches me all about business. He teaches me how to get a business out of the ground. He teaches me how to sell. He teaches me how to teach. He teaches me how to do public speaking. He was phenomenal just watching him. I remember once I was having a review with him. He said, so what are your goals? This was my 1 year review. I said, my goal is to be you. I want to be you. That's how cool you are. All right. And so we went off and with that, we did well together. And on one of my trips, I was in Denver and I was working with a CPA, and the CPAs always at that time put their sons and daughters on the computer because it was the new thing that they needed to get their sons and daughters involved in. And here I am working with this guy's son in Denver. His name was Jared. And nothing worked back then, but it was okay. No one expected anything to work, you know. But now if something doesn't work, we just throw it out and we get something else, right? Very quickly. But back then, hey, everybody was early adopters. So here's this guy, and he says to me at the end of the day, he says, hey, I've got my friend Kathy and I are going to go out tonight, and her girlfriend's coming to town. You want to go on a blind date? I said, I'd do anything to get out of this office right now because this feels pretty awkward. So we went on this date, and it was me and Jared go to Kathy's house. Kathy, his date. She opens the door. We see each other, and it is, boom, love at first sight. There was something there. It was pretty incredible. So my date didn't show up. So the three of us go out, and Kathy and I spend the evening trying to dump this guy who's my client, because we want to get to know each other. Well, long story short is we 6 months later, we got married, and we've been married for 43 years. We have four kids and we have four grandchildren now. So it's been a pretty amazing life. Wasn't all that simple for her though, I'll tell you that. But the company grew pretty fast after those times. That computer was a very expensive computer, but within about 4 years, IBM introduced the PC. You remember back in late 1980, and in 1981, they introduced the PC XT, which was a computer with a hard drive, and that just changed everything. So every CPA in the world was buying computers. The business just exploded. It was fantastic to be part of that. And it was about that time that somebody came in, a bigger company, a public company, that said, man, we want to buy your business. So at 28 years old, I became a millionaire. We sold the business for $4.8 million, and I own 40% of the business. And here I am making $60,000 a year thinking I am the richest guy in the world. And then all of a sudden, a couple of million bucks poured in. I didn't even know there was that much money in the world. I didn't know that back then. We didn't think like we think today, which is everybody starts a business to sell it. We just started a business to be in business. But we sold this business and we were right at the right place, right time, and it all worked out. And that started my career really in corporate. It was about 3 months after we sold that business that I had our first child, Julia, who's now 39 years old and the mother of two. But she was just born back then. And with that business, the fellow that bought that business was a guy named Jim Porter. Jim Porter was my next leader that I followed. Jim Porter was, he was this Texan, 6 foot two, good looking, little salt and pepper gray hair. And he showed me, he was the guy that was helping me get to that next stage in my career. And that next stage in my career was not to be an entrepreneur, but to be a professional manager. How do I run a business that's already in place and build it from here to here, as opposed to Richard, who took me from there is just an idea, how do we get it out of the ground? Those are two different skills. So I started following Jim, and there was something unique about Jim that I hadn't seen anybody else. People talked about him that he was behind his back in the corporation, that he was religious. And they always had this hint of hypocrisy about him. But I found Jim to be somebody that was of really high integrity. And he and I hit it off. Richard didn't have any interest in becoming a professional manager. He had money now and he wanted to kind of start something new. And I'm sitting here saying, this would be a really important thing for me to learn from this guy. And this Jim, he believed in me. He invested in me. We would go to dinners and spend hours together, and he would be pouring into me on it because I had question after question after question on how to become a better professional manager. The term was general manager. So how do I run a company? And it was just incredible. The other thing that happened to me back then is I was also introduced to corporate life. I mean, I was always in small businesses, right? Now here I am in a corporate life. And in corporate life, I find that there's a whole different class of leaders in corporate life. This is my experience. And I was in the land now of politics and excess. It was incredible. So the term I think that I heard from a friend of mine once is that he said he lived by in his former life was excess is not enough. Excess is not enough. And when I got involved with these, you know, when you're in a small business, there ain't no excess. You're trying to push nickels and dimes around trying to get things going. But here there was excess and everybody was just striving to be bigger and more powerful than the other person that I was kind of competing with. So they bought me and they owned me is what happened. And I bought into their system. I talked as a leader like I was in it for you. But the fact of the matter is I was good and I was really in it for me. And that's how I sort of learned to survive in this corporation. Now, what happened was that corporation, public company, got bought out by another public company. So now it was a company called Sterling Software. And in comes a guy named Sterling Williams. And Sterling Williams is a guy that was the CEO of Sterling Software. He was out of Dallas, brilliant guy. One of the most incredibly smart guys that I've ever met, knew in my life, probably one of the best business people I ever met in my entire life. And where Jim taught me how to build a business, I watched Sterling run meetings, and he actually showed me how to build an enterprise. So multiple businesses all coming together, you know, to build great value. So it was really a tremendous education from him. But they also perfected it's all about power and it's all about money. And while I already had training wheels for that, so I was kind of ready for it when I went to that corporation. But the way he treated things is he would take those top 15 people in the corporation, okay, and this is a business that's maybe $300 million. And those 15 people were paid really, really well. And I was one of those people. And they had, we had great perks and we were fawned over. Everybody else, they were workers. And no one really paid attention to them, you know, because we could swap you out. That was the idea. And I was like, whoa, man, I started feeling uncomfortable with that, saying that's just not where I came from. It doesn't make sense to me. Being in a small business, we work together like that. But that's what I saw. Then I got bought out again. We sold our division off. I was running professional services worldwide out of New York. And we sold to a company called Computer People. And I became their U.S. CEO and ran their operation here. I reported into London. And it was just a bad time for the Gulf War. Remember that back in 19, for those who are old enough, this was back in 1992, is there was a recession that ensued from that. And I was just miserable. I was making more money than I ever made in my life. And I had the best office and best perks that I ever had in my life. I was traveling like a madman. I had three kids. I didn't see my kids. I didn't see my wife. I was gone on Monday morning and I was back on Friday night. It took me Saturday to kind of recover. And then Sunday, I was already preparing to leave again. So it wasn't much of a life. You know, I had all of the trappings, if you will, as a leader in a corporation. And my boss came to me during this and he said, we got into a conversation and we got into a little bit of an argument. He said, look, man, if you're not happy here doing what you're doing, you should just leave. I was having breakfast, I remember, over at the Galleria. And I said, you know, I'm not happy here. He said, well, then you should just leave. So I said, okay, I'll leave. And I walked out the door of the gallery and I said, holy crap, did I just get fired or did I quit? But it didn't matter, I'm unemployed now. This is the first time I'm unemployed in like my whole entire life. I've been working since I'm 11. How can this be? And what I realized is that my whole identity was tied up in my work. I was a CEO. I was in charge of a $65 million business at the time. I did travel first class. I did take the Concorde to Europe. I did do the, that was me. I was with these guys. And now I was nothing. So my identity just evaporated that quickly. And so I remember I was in the car with my son, David, at the time, during this period. And we're driving along down Paper Mill Road. And David looks at me. He's 4 years old. He's 32 now. He's 4 years old. And he says to me, hey, Dad, Dr. Phil next door is a doctor. What are you? When people would ask me, what are you? I would give him my resume. Because it was impressive. I wasn't working. I wasn't going to tell them, well, I'll tell you what I am. I'm unemployed. That's what I am. Okay, I didn't tell them that. I don't want to tell them all the good stuff. And people are kind in the South, and they just kind of went along with it that I didn't answer the question. But I'll tell you what. With David, I'm looking at him, and I said, he don't know what a resume is. He wants to know what I am. And he don't know unemployed. So I said, Dave, I guess I'm just your dad. He said, that's great. I'll never forget that. And that was sort of the level set for me in my life. You can take a lot of things away, but I was a husband and I was a father. And that's going to be that for the rest of my life. So that was my level set. One night, Kathy and I are having dinner. We had a bottle of wine. She drank a glass. I drank the rest of the bottle. And then I sat down and I'm watching TV and watching the ball game, watching the Braves, and I'm drinking beer. And our bedroom door is closed and she's in there. My daughter's bedroom door is closed. My other daughter's bedroom door is closed. And my son's bedroom door is closed. And I hit me. I said, man, you've become your father. When you drink, you're so unpredictable. No one wants to be around you. And I swore I'd never be my father because he was a very heavy drinker. And I got this vision at that time. And the vision was, you keep doing what you're doing and you're going to lose any chance at a good career. And you're going to lose your wife and you're going to lose your kids. I mean, it was just like plain as day for me. I don't know where that came from. I think I do now, but I didn't then. And I called this guy that was in another neighborhood, an old neighborhood of mine who I heard went to rehab. And I said, Jim, I said, you know, I just want to talk to you about your rehab experience. So we had lunch the very next day. And that after lunch, he said, how about you and me go to an AA meeting? I said, oh, no, I don't have a drinking problem. I mean, that's where drunks go. He goes, no, no, it's not people in raincoat, dirty raincoats, you know, and that can't seem to keep it together. The people that look like you and me, you know, executive types and all. So I went, best suit I could I put on, I'm sitting in the back of the room. Thank God there were 50 people. At the end of that meeting, there was a guy that stood up who was a painter, you know, the white outfit with the paint specks all over it. And he points to me in the back of the room. He says, I don't know who you are or why you're here, but if you want to stop drinking one day at a time, then you'll come up here and you'll take this white chip, which is the international sign of surrender, and you'll stop drinking one day at a time. Secondly, he said, I want you to hit your knees in the morning and ask God to keep you sober, and at night, hit your knees and thank God for keeping you sober. And that guy gave me permission to do two things that I wanted to do most in life at that time. One is I wanted to stop drinking. For 10 years up until that time, so from my late 20s when we sold our company until that time, every morning I would get up, every single morning, and say, I'm not gonna drink today. And 6 o'clock, I was drinking. 10 years every day. What a disappointment I was to myself. What kind of discipline did I have? But this guy showed me how to do that. And secondly, he gave me permission to do something I wanted to do through my whole 30s, and I didn't know how to get there. He said, I want you to talk to God. I'm like, how can I talk to God? I turned my back on God. You should hear some of the things I said about God. He says, no, God wants you to talk to him. And so I started talking to God. And that, it wasn't about 6 months later, I went to 180 meetings in 180 days because that's how serious I was, having seen this vision of what my life would be on alcohol. And what happened was they started talking about who's the higher power. And I'm thinking, man, the higher power, this is pretty cool. I said, who do they think the higher power is? People were saying, well, I think it's the people in this room. That's my higher power. And somebody said, it's the book of AA. That's my higher power. And somebody said, it's my sponsor. I said, man, you have 12 years of religious training. You know that's not the higher power. Who did this miracle in your life, Charlie? I asked myself. And within 3 days of asking that question to myself, people came to me in the technology community and invited me to a dinner. And in that dinner, there was an MCI executive who stood up and talked. And he gave a talk pretty much like this. And the next thing I know, he mentions the name Jesus in it. And I'm like, whoa. Where did all this come from? It was, I came here for a business meeting. And then I went to a breakfast. And at breakfast, this guy says, the speaker is Adolf Coors the Fourth. There's 1,000 people here and there's Adolf Coors the Fourth. So the guy who owns all the beer is talking to the guy who wants all the beer. All right. And he was a big, strapping, good looking guy. He had it all. I mean, he's the fourth generation Coors family. You know, he ran their business. He was fabulous. And he had a story that just wouldn't stop. And it really connected with me. And he asked a question on what wall are you leaning your ladder against in life? And I just never forgot that question. On the way to, so I left that meeting and I, it was just a couple months later, I was on the way to Hilton Head and I'm listening to Adolf Coors. They gave me a little tape. So I'm listening. It was cassette tapes back then. Okay. We didn't have streaming. Okay. So I put the tape and I'm listening. And it's the same talk he gave. And at the end of that talk, he says, you know, God so loved the world that he sent his one and only son that whomever would believe in him would not perish, but have eternal life. Jesus didn't come to judge the world. He came to save the world. And he asked the question, he said, if you're listening to this, he said, why are you holding on to the control in your life? How's that worked out for you? And I'm sitting there and saying, I'll tell you how it's worked out for me. I'm feeling guilty all the time. Because one thing that happens with alcohol, if you can think it's sober, you'll do it loaded. If you can think it sober, you'll do it loaded. And when you do what some of those thoughts are, you carry guilt. How do you relieve yourself of that guilt? He was giving me the solution. He says, if you give your life to Christ, confess this, he'll take away your sins, make you white as snow, and take away your guilt. And I said, I am in. And so I gave my life to Christ right in the car, I-16, going to Hilton Head. And I was so excited about it. When I got to Hilton Head and I saw Kathy, I didn't say one word. Not one. But a little later, it wound up that Kathy also wound up coming to Christ, as did her kids. So it was amazing. I was born again. She was born again. And most important, our marriage was born again. It all, at this time, as difficult as it was, it all worked out. So now I have this wife. I have now four kids, by the way. You know, when you're unemployed, the first thing that happens is your wife gets pregnant. Okay, just to let you know. And I have no job. And I'm attending AA meetings every night. And going to Bible study. So this is, my life has kind of moved on to like this whole new network. The one thing they tell you in AA is you got to drop all your friends. So man, it took me 25 years to come up with, 30 years to come up with all these great friends that drink like me. Now I have to find people that don't drink. Well, who are those? Well, I started getting presented. They're in AA and they're in Bible studies, okay? That's where they are, right? But it was great. So I'm sitting at the pool one day and I'm holding on to Nick, who was an infant. And I get this call from Claudine. Claudine was a branch manager for me in that Sterling business that I was talking about. And she said, look, I'm going to start a company tomorrow at 9 a.m. at my house. Why don't you come and join me? You could be the CEO. I'll be the VP of sales and you fund it and we'll build this company. And I said, I'm holding Nick. I'm like, I don't know. You know, is that the right thing? She goes, you're not doing anything. She says, why don't you just do this? She goes, forget it. I'm not going to try to convince you. If you show up at 9 o'clock, we're in business together. I showed up at 9. We got in business together. And it was in professional services. So we start working. 8 months later, she walks into my office and she said, I hate you. I can't work here anymore. All you do is work us to death. It's a negative environment. I quit. And she left. And I'm in sublet space, no windows. And I was down 150 grand. And I'm like, oh, this is worse than I ever thought it could be. At the time, I get a call that day after she walks out the door from a guy named Bob. He used to be a VP of sales for me. And he says, you know, you've made some connections in Atlanta and I don't have a whole lot, he said, but I'm looking for a new place to work. You know, I've been VP sales at this other software house. I'm thinking of something else. I said, well, let's have lunch. I was like, Bob, he's always an upbeat guy, you know, so maybe he'll get me out of these doldrums. I don't know what I'm going to do with this company. I don't want to run and I don't want to own. I get with Bob and Bob's 37 years old. And he says, I don't like what I'm doing. I don't like the people I'm working for. You know, they don't stand for the right things. You know, I don't like the way they're building the company. And I said, Bob, I said, why don't you start your own company? You can build it in your image. It could be you. He said, oh, that'd be a pain in the neck. Who would start a company? And I said, no, you should do this. So I found myself encouraging this leader to start his own company. And he said, all right, just for fun, what company would I start? I said, I just happen to have one. So we go from lunch to the office and I said, that could be your desk. You could be the CEO. You could be the owner of this thing. You should do it. I'll fund it. He says, I don't know anything about services. I'm a software products guy. I said, oh, it's easy. I'll teach you. And we start that company. And he built that company to $8 million in revenue. I mean, it was really pretty exciting over time. That was how I became an angel investor. So once I funded Bob, I said, you know, I really like working with entrepreneurs. It brought me back to the Richard days, if you will. And so this is where I really need to be. And so it got to be pretty exciting. So my new mission in life really was, I became known in Atlanta as the entrepreneur's investor. And my byline was, I help experienced managers achieve their dream of starting and building their own company. And that's what I did. And so people started to come to me and I started to fund their companies. And, you know, this was really, as I look back, this completion of my transition in management, of going from I'm in it because it's about me to I'm in it because it's about you. So I was there to help entrepreneurs be successful. That was a huge transition for me. So I moved from being a leader that was the center of attention to basically serving leaders. It's not about me, it was about them. I've invested in over 35 different companies over my 25-year career. Some of them actually worked. Some of them didn't work, which is sad. But some of them are still trying to make it work. So I still have some existing investment. But every single one of those entrepreneurs, every one of those leaders is doing what they were called by God to do. They're on purpose the way God made them to be on purpose. So they're creating something from nothing, which to me is just an incredible opportunity. And I've watched this for over 25 years. I've been a part of serving these people. And it's been such a pleasure for me. It's an honor almost to be in the room with them, whether it works or it doesn't work, whether they make the money or they lose the money. And I'm still serving entrepreneurs, by the way, in this whole COVID social distancing environment. One thing that came up is I found a lot of people, and this was back in late March, a lot of people, entrepreneurs, were asking me questions about decisions they had to make. Should I hire people? Should I fire everybody? You know, and conserve my cash, and all the questions that we were asking ourselves as leaders in business. And I said, you know, maybe if I bring everybody in together on a Zoom meeting, you know, they can all talk to each other and share what they're thinking about doing and why they're thinking about doing it. And out of that came a Wednesday morning meeting from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. called the Paparelli Zoom Chat for Entrepreneurs. The byline on it is entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs. And, it goes on every week, and it's become a great success. So I'm still serving entrepreneurs even that way. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention I had a couple of new leaders in my life after I came to the Lord. One was Bill Leonard, and the other one was a guy named Reggie Campbell. Bill Leonard is a broker in the real estate business. He led me to the Lord, and he still stands with me, as did Reggie Campbell. And these two guys really, they're great leaders. Reggie was an entrepreneur of the year in the state of Georgia. And they showed me how to follow Jesus as a leader. They showed me how to follow Jesus as a leader. Reggie just recently passed away and has left a big hole in my life. But because we had such a relationship, he could see right through me, that guy. I'd say something, he goes, "You don't mean that. You don't mean that. Don't lie to me." Ever have somebody in your life like that they can just, they can go see straight through you? Well, Reggie's still in my head, and he's been dead for over a year now, okay? But he's still in my head. I still think about him all the time. That's how much of an influence he's been in my life. So those are my people, and that's my story. That's what I have. But I want to give you the three lessons that I learned from all that life experience about leadership. Here's my three lessons. The first one is, I must be a great follower to be a great leader. I must be a great follower to be a great leader. I followed, as you saw, a lot of great leaders. I followed a lot of those great leaders. They saw promise in me and they invested in me. It was I was really fortunate to have them in my life. I'm grateful to each and every one of them. But you know, the fact of the matter is, they're all men. They're just men. And men are men, all right? As women are women, I mean, we are people. So they're just men. They're not God. Jesus is God. And so what I found is, now I follow Jesus. These people, we work together, but we follow Jesus. This puts great men into perspective, is what it did for me. Jesus mentors me every single day. Every morning I have a quiet time and I read the Bible. I pray with Jesus and to Jesus. And what I find is that he forms me and makes me a more effective leader each and every day, because he's like Reggie. He sees right through me. And I learn from him. He is the fount of wisdom for me. He actually said, "He who is greatest among you must be your servant." And he put that desire to serve in my heart. That is not a natural, that's a supernatural change in me. That it's not about me. I'm here to serve. And we can all say that, but do our feet move in that direction? Okay. The only way that can happen is through a supernatural transformation. He did that. So the first one was, I must be a great follower to be a great leader. Secondly, I must be on the mission of identifying and mentoring leaders. You want to be a great leader? You must identify and help develop other leaders. That's what we have to do. Great leaders like these men in my life have a legacy of leaders that they left behind. And I look at Jesus, and he did. He had the 12 apostles. He was God. He had 12 leaders that he selected. But you know what? If you just find one leader in your whole life, look at the breadth and depth of impact that leaders have in their families and on society in general, and in their communities. So that's what we are called to do as leaders. And lastly, I must continue to associate with great leaders. My inner circle of colleagues determines my values, my mission, and also my behaviors. One of the things I have learned in life is that we are who we hang with. Look around. Who are you hanging out with? Are they helping you grow? These men in my life, they just, you can see Richard, he moved me along, and Jim Porter moved me along, and Sterling Williams moved me along. Bill Leonard moved me along, Reggie Campbell. These are men that shaped me and who I am today. So those are the three. I must be a great follower to be a great leader. I must be on the mission of building, identifying and building leaders. And lastly, I must continue to associate with great leaders. That's what I learned from my life. So that's my leadership journey. What kind of leader are you? Are you a leader who knows there's a God and you think it's you? Or are you a leader who knows there's a God and you know it's not you? Who are you following? Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Stay up here just a minute, Charlie. We want to take questions from anyone that might have a question for Charlie. We appreciate so much, and I hope, and I know you appreciate it too, the heart that Charlie shared today was his life's journey, but he wasn't afraid just, and he's a leader, he's not afraid to just throw it all out there. So we appreciate that so much. So do you have a question that maybe you'd like to ask Charlie, either here present or via Zoom? And I guess, Daniel, you'll let me know if there's any particular questions. Anybody have a question?
Yes.
I was reading your bio yesterday before coming in. I saw you speak at the Youth Ablaze conference every year.
Oh, yeah.
I was interested to what led you to.
Yeah, so why do I speak at the Youth Ablaze conference every year? Let me tell you how I am not one of these people who seeks to go on missions in third world or developing countries, okay? And I was tied into this, I got introduced to this pastor. His name's Pastor Elijah Sebuchu of Uganda. He came into a Bible study I was running at ATDC. Somebody that was a participant asked if they could bring him, and they bring him. And he was one of those guys that when he talked, I fell in love with him. Because he said, I said, what are you about? He says, I am all about working with orphans in Uganda, because there's so many of them, because HIV/AIDS has ravaged the older population. I want to pour my life into them so that they know Jesus and they become the next generation of leaders for Uganda. And I said, what a cool vision that is. So I've known him for years. I was supporting him. And one day he was over at my house for dinner. And he once more asked, I really want you to come over here and I want you to speak to our people on entrepreneurship. And before I could say no again, Kathy said, we would love to do that. Okay. And that's how I started going over there. And speak to 10,000 people. I put a curriculum together. Each and every year, God gives me a curriculum to speak to. And it's been a real growth experience for me. Talk about serving the underserved. And these are people, they come there, and they're in a lot of cases, they're in rags. And you say, how do I speak to them about starting a business? They have nothing. How do you do that? It was really a lot of prayer and time on my knees to kind of figure that out, but it's been a great blessing for me.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Go ahead.
That's what I was curious about, your kind of secret sauce of maybe character judgment when you are talking to the various entrepreneurs that are looking for your advice. How much does their walk in faith factor into your decision of working with those clients?
Good question.
Yeah, how much does my walk in their walk, how much does my their walk in faith kind of
influence your decision?
Influence my decision on investing in those people. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a deep walk of faith. Okay. What I look for is those first two criteria. Do they believe there's a God and it's them? Or do they believe a God and it's not them? I can work with, they believe there's a God and it's not them, okay? I'm careful though that there is generally some Christian background that they have, okay? So that they grew up in the church or whatever. They might not be in church anymore, but I look at that as an opportunity. So they've got sort of a foundation of Christ, even though they might not be completely aware of it. And so I work with them and, but then there's others that my early on, I was very devoted to making sure that they were born again believers, but I've kind of loosened that up. But getting involved with people that are have no Christian background, it's been, doesn't work for me. I always say when things get bad, and in startups, they get bad, okay? When things are great, you know, what's the difference? Well, making money, right? It's a great thing. When things get bad, where do you go for that truth? And so if we can go back to the Word of God, I always feel like we got a chance here to keep it together. It's a good question. Yes,
sir. I'm just being freaking. In regards to looking at leaders, I should help follow and serve.
Can't hear you. Can I?
In regards to leaders and looking who I should like help serve in a sense, who I should follow, older gentlemen who I should
okay,
and mentors. As I was in banking before, and I realized, similar to you, I was chasing all these things that weren't feeding my spirit the right way.
Weren't important to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I rediscovered God, I realized the type of mentors I had values that I didn't like.
Okay.
And as I tried to transition, it's hard for me to kind of flesh that out. A lot of people want to mentor me because I kind of see a light, and I allow myself to get in those rooms, get in those circles, then I realize what kind of men they actually are later on. So what kind of advice can you give to other people who are looking for leaders? And all you see at first is their title, you see how much money they make, and like that's kind of the definition to keep pursuing them. Sorry, that's a good mentor because professionally, how do you kind of...
So how do you find a good mentor then, really?
Yeah.
That's in alignment with your values,
exactly.
In effect, right? You know, and with you, it's your faith values.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say first you got to know what you're striving for. what am I trying to be? Am I trying to be, you know, like we're talking the best salesman, okay, in the media business? Am I trying to run a business? Am I trying to be the best banker that there is? Is you'll then start, if you know what you're looking for, then you'll see the person that you want to become. And that's what you're saying. I see titles now. So I want to be that title. Sit down with them. Just talk to them. You say, look, I'm just looking for a little help. Don't ask them to mentor you. Just say, I'm looking for help. Let's get together. Can we talk? And they're either going to sort of fall in love with you and you with them, or you're not. You know, you'll know. But you have to have that one-on-one time with them in order to establish that. But you got to know where you're going first. And you'll know. You'll know.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Clint, yeah, I had a quick question. The journey you went through from a business growth standpoint.
Yeah.
It was very segmented pieces of you were trying to get something from a leader and grow to the next level.
Yeah.
You know, and as spiritually, did you go through a similar process? How did you identify your gaps and your spiritual advisors? Reggie, Mr. Leonard, how did they just come into your life through something, or were there gaps that you identified? How do you, I don't want to say select your advisors to grow spiritually, but that's what I'm trying to ask you.
Yeah, so how did I really connect with like Bill Leonard and Reggie Campbell, right? So what happened is I got invited to that breakfast they were talking about. It was the High Tech Prayer Breakfast here in Atlanta that was started by Bill Leonard. And Bill Leonard, so I was not a believer. I was an AA, and somebody invited me to this breakfast, and I'm watching Adolf Kors. And then at the end, Bill Leonard got up at the podium. And I think what he did is he recounted the gospel of Jesus Christ and gave an invitation for us to accept Christ. I don't remember that. I just know that that's what he does. But what I remember about Bill Leonard was how convicted he was in what he believed. I remember his tone of voice and the way he was leaning forward and kind of just his eye contact. So I called him up. I didn't know him from Adam. I called him up. I said, hey, I'm looking for office space. Can we get together? I didn't want to really look for office space. I didn't have a business that was going anywhere, so I didn't have any for it. But I wanted to get with him because I want to meet this guy. Well, if he thinks I'm going to buy something, he's going to show up, right? So he did. And he met me in my windowless office, and we talked. And I said to him, I remember saying to him, I said, man, you know a lot of Christian people. I said, I don't know any Christian people. Can you introduce me to these Christian technology people? He goes, yeah. And that's how I got into my first Bible study. He said, you should go to this thing, and you should go to that thing. And before you know it, he stayed in my life. And the next thing I know, he invited me and Kathy to a Bible study and talked about marriage and what it meant to be in a biblical marriage. And so that's how I met Bill. Because I just was drawn to him, because what he didn't know is, like I said, at AA, they tell you need to drop all your old friends. Well, when you're 40 years old, how do you drop all your old friends and find new friends? Bill Leonard. He's a real estate guy. He had a great book of business. He knew everybody. So he introduced me great. And then the other thing, one of the people he introduced me to was Reggie Campbell. And Reggie had just come off being Entrepreneur of the Year in the state of Georgia, and everybody talked about him in glowing terms. And so I had Reggie on the other side of me, and I started to hit it off with him a bit. Funny story with Reggie, I called him into one of these businesses that I was investing in, because it was a telecom business. He had AT&T telecom experience. So I said, man, you know Cam Lanier down there and all this. I said, you can walk us into PowerTel. I said, this would be a great thing. Why don't you come and put some money into this thing, and you and I will kind of work with these entrepreneurs and build this business. First meeting I'm in with Reggie, I walk out of the meeting and I go home to Kathy and I said, I hate that guy. And Kathy said, not even knowing him, she said, he'll be good for you. Hang in there with him. I said, you don't even know who he is. How could you tell me to hang out with him? And that was the beginning of a relationship. Because he would confront me. And you need people like that in your life. But he had a foundation of Christ that was very deep at the time that I didn't have. I was a rookie. So, good question.
Let's give another round of applause. Oh, excuse me. Did you have one more question?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you for your sharing. I definitely inspired by it. Number one, the fact that you are the leader that you are, and you're not discreet about your walk spiritually. It's just great to hear you speak in this type of form. But I have a question with regards to, you said you started 36.
35.
35.
Yeah.
Businesses just, some of them succeeded, some of them did not. Can you tell me the industries or the type of businesses that have succeeded at this point?
Yeah, I started in the professional services business, okay? So I didn't have that much money to that I could just invest in businesses and 10 years later they can sell out. So I was looking for businesses that are like normal businesses where you get the profitability and they throw off cash, you know? And those businesses, professional services businesses, did very, very well. Then I moved into the software as a service business, and businesses that did well for me, not surprisingly, are back office businesses. You know, so if they were in back office accounting and those kind of things, running in the guts of the business, I did well with that. If I moved out of that, I didn't do well. You know, like if it was what's called business to consumer type businesses or apps or any of that, I just fell on my face and I just lost the money. So the closer I stuck to who I am and what I know and the network that I have, the more value I brought to the business, the more successful the business was. But thanks for your encouragement. I appreciate that.
Let's give another round of applause.
You guys are great.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And on that vein that we've been talking about, mentoring and getting to know other leaders and, you know, the leaders that you like to be around, all those things that Charlie just mentioned, we have an opportunity for you as a follow-on to our breakfast events. We have a four-week series of a group that gets together. And we call those leadership roundtables. And it gives an opportunity for you to meet with other co-like-minded people. And we do this, like I say, over a four-week period, meeting together 1 hour a week. These typically start 2 weeks or so after our event today. And what we'll be using, we typically use a book of some sort to uses our text and our discussion, sort of the content of our discussion. And we'll be using John Maxwell's book called The 21 Indispensable Qualities of a Leader. That will be the book. This will be the book that we'll be using over this four-week series. If you're interested in participating, we give you an option this go around to either meet in person as a group, or you can also meet virtually. And to do that, what you need to do is complete a little survey that's on our website. It's on there now. And that website is called GwinnettLeadershipForum.org. GwinnettLeadershipForum.org. You can go there, complete the survey, let us know your interest, and then we'll be in touch with you to figure out the best way to get you involved in one of these leadership roundtables. So again, we want to encourage you to do that. As we close, again, thank you, Charlie, for your honesty and just bringing to the table your life story. We appreciate that so much. And we'll keep you posted on future events. We hope to have another breakfast event in the spring of next year. We'll be sure to keep you posted. And again, hopefully by that time, we'll be able to fill our room up a little bit more with this COVID thing, hopefully getting a little further away from us. So thank you again. We appreciate you being here. Have a great day. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.